out of the clouds into the light. That's a reference to the weather. This invocation from the Sufi poet Nasir Khusro. If you would light a lamp within your heart, make knowledge and action your wick and oil. If you wish to dwell on the meadow of mercy and blessing, graze on knowledge and action today. Moisten the seed of action with knowledge, for the seed will not grow without moisture. Let us spend a few quiet moments together. You can light a candle or just sit quietly for a few moments. Let this be our prayer this morning, the words of Mirabai, Indian mystical poet from the 1500s. In my travels, I spent time with a great yogi, and once he said to me, "Become so still, you hear the blood flowing in your veins." One night, as I sat quiet, I seemed on the verge of entering a world inside, so vast, I know it is the source of all of us. I invite you to a few moments of prayer, meditation, and reflection.
At the straight gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and many will go therein. For straight is the gate and narrow is the way that leads to life, and few there be that find it.
How many of you have heard this passage quoted to you at some time in your life? Anybody here go to a Christian church at any point in their life? And just give me, like, you know, a 10-second. What were you taught that this means? Anyone? Not very many of us were getting in. Others of you? You better behave. Stay on the straight and narrow path. One more. This will be the definitive one, I'm sure. Anyone? All right. Nobody else? Things are tough. Things are tough. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Now, how many of you believe the Bible was written in King James English? I had a lengthy debate with Reverend Lord just this week on this matter. And finally he ceded. "Chuck, I realize it wasn't written in King James English. It was written in American," he said. Well, now, he's a scholar from the University of Chicago. I'm just a lowly graduate of Abilene Christian. But I do know this, the Bible was written in a language called Greek. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of these words. First of all, how do you spell the word straight in this passage? Don't be shy. S-T-R-A-I-G-H-T, someone said. Someone said A-I-T. You see, one of the primary problems with the people who say it means what it says and says what it means is they didn't spell the word right. The word is spelled S-T-R-A-I-T. And that is a big difference than straight. Walking a straight line. For the word in the Greek means a cramped, narrow, confined, constricted space. We've heard of, and some of you may have been, to the Straits of Gibraltar. Has anyone ever been there? I haven't had the privilege. But I don't think it's straight, is it? It's a treacherous place. Or we might use the idiom, oh, they're really in a strait now. It means that it's a place of trouble. The root word in the Greek literally means to groan. It's the place of groaning. It's not the place of conformity. And the word narrow in this passage means to be squeezed, to be afflicted, to be oppressed. It's translated elsewhere in the New Testament, tribulation. It is the tough way. It is the hard way. It is the crooked path which can be filled with persecution. And the word life in this passage means to come into the absolute fullness of your being. The tight way, the constricted way, the way of straight and narrow is indeed paradoxically the way to the fullness of life and being. And few there be that find it. I have heard this passage. My father is a Church of Christ minister. I went to church enough for several lifetimes. Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, Bible studies, revivals, tent meetings, you name it. I have heard this passage preached on, hollered on. I've had it pounded into my head that to follow the straight and narrow means what? You do what we tell you to do. You walk the straight line. And by God, we will tell you what that straight line is. But in my 30s, I was in the therapist chair, as many of us have been raised that way, right? And I've had these passages in my head for so many hours and years. I had an aha experience. It hit me in the moment of despair, where I was there trying to regain some sense of faith. I realized that's what it means. It's the way of courage. It's not the way of conformity. It's not the way of doing what the preacher tells you. It's not the way of doing what the church tells you, or the denomination, or Boston. It's not the way of the priest. It's not the way of mommy or daddy or grandma or grandpa. It's the way of courage. It's the hard way. And few there be. There are not very many people who are willing to take the pressure within themselves to find their own path, their own faith, their own truth, their own conviction, their own calling. If you're familiar at all with the faith development literature of a guy named James Fowler, who took developmental psychology, Kohlberg stages of faith, and the like, what he said is that very few people get beyond the institutional level of faith. That's the faith where you do, you know, what the teachers tell you to do, what the government tells you to do, blah, 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 what the churches, whoever, the authorities, that's institutional faith. He says there's two more stages beyond that. What he calls searching faith, right? Searching faith, and then finally what he calls owned faith. He also calls it universal faith. And the people in this category are your Martin Luther Kings, are your Gandhis, are your Jesuses, are your Buddhas, are your Nelson Mandelas, or maybe some of you. So it's moving beyond what you've been told you should believe and doing the tough inner work and outer work to find your own way. So ironically, as is so often the case with these passages, it means exactly the opposite of what we have been told that it means. This is a passage of liberation. It is not a passage of conformity. My friends, this is a Unitarian Universalist credo. Jesus gets it. He's just like you and I. He wants a searching faith. He wants an own faith. Jesus is one of us. If He was here, He'd probably sign the book. Although He probably signed it Live Oak rather than First Church, you know, because he's kind of a radical that way, you know. He wouldn't want to go with the main church, the mother church. The Unitarian poet E.E. Cummings said this: "To be nobody but yourself in a world which is doing its best night and day to make you everybody else means to fight the hardest fight which any human being can fight and never stop fighting." Now, St. Paul and or his editor screwed up a lot of things. But here's one where he hit the nail on the head. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. You cannot go to the self-help section of the New Age bookstore and work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. It ain't that easy. You can't watch a PBS special with Dr. Wayne Dyer and think you got it. I'm not saying there's no value. I'm saying it's about your own digging. One of my favorite prophets, the spiritual psychologist Carl Jung, said, "Anyone who takes the sure road is as good as dead." Now, as a church, this is a ripe time in our culture and in our world where we can be a haven for the searchers of faith, and for those who are moving towards owned faith. That is what our faith tradition has always been about. That's what it can continue to be about if you and I will carry it forth and not abandon it to convenience or shallowness. One of the next major frontiers in our country in terms of civil rights and human dignity is that of rights for same-sex partners. And we saw that during our election, this was cynically manipulated, strategically manipulated, where 11 states voted on anti-gay marriage referendums and legislation and the like. Now, you guys are a welcoming church, so you already have that piece in place. But it's about continuing to be that kind of space and being bold in letting people know who we are. This is a time to stand forward and stand up. Now, have you seen, or did you see after the election, there was something going around the internet? It was this map, and it showed what we now know as Canada as blue, and there was a few blue places like around the edge of the United States. And then the heartland of America was solid red. Did anybody see this? And it said, you know, the United States of Canada. And then what did it say on the red part? Jesus land. And let me just say, that is so unfair to Jesus. I want to read you an excerpt. This is the congratulatory letter President Bush got from Dr. Bob Jones III. I'm sure the mentor of many in this room. "If you're in your re-election, God has graciously granted America, though she does not deserve it, a reprieve from the agenda of paganism. you pagans. You have been given a mandate. We the people expect your voice to be clear and certain like the sound of a trumpet. Because you seek the Lord daily, we who know the Lord will follow that kind of voice eagerly. Don't equivocate. Put your agenda on the front burner and let it boil. You owe the liberals nothing. They despise you because they despise your Christ. Honor the Lord and He will honor you. As kindly as I can say it, this man wouldn't know Jesus or Christ if he came up and gave him a tax cut. You know, the churches like this are not churches of Christ, and they are not churches of Jesus. They are churches of Paul. I grew up in those churches. I know about those churches. I know the way they think. I did a series of sermons in Fort Stockton, Texas, in my first ministry, where I just took the gospel stories and I looked at the quality of the relationship Jesus had with people and how he influenced people. You know what? One of my members came and said, he goes, "I don't know where you're getting this crap you're preaching." I said, "I'm getting it right from the Bible. I would read the text and I would talk about it." You know what he wanted? He wanted me to talk about rules and regulations and doctrines and how they were right and everybody else was wrong, how everybody else was going to hell and they weren't. That's the Church of Paul. Paul described himself as a Pharisee of Pharisees. The Pharisees were the fundamentalist, literalistic, legalistic people of their days. And I'm sorry to say that a Damascus Road conversion did not change the dynamics of Paul's faith much at all. And if you want to know what Jesus thought about the scribes and Pharisees, this is very entertaining reading. You might get a cathartic laugh if you go home and read that today. Jesus said, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, for you travel hill and dale, you travel sea and land to make a single convert, and you make them twice the son of hell as you are yourself." And then he goes on, as we say in the South, to shuck the corn. Go home and read it. Good reading. You might even see some parallels today. Paul was fearful of women. He was fearful of sexuality, of the body, of personal power of each seeker. Now in the exit polls, 20 to 22% of people said what? They voted on what? Moral values. Now, since that time, that polling has been questioned. But regardless, it led to a gigantic discussion, which is ongoing in America, about moral values. And of course, those moral values were about two things, right? Abortion and gay marriage. Why? Because these people were expertly led into believing this is what moral values is. Now, the churches of Paul, I'm sorry to say, have not released themselves from this whole cycle of oppressor or oppressed. There's a continuum there. You're either the oppressor or the oppressed. And instead of transforming that, you may change from being the oppressed to the oppressor, but it's always a cycle of control and violence. I was in downtown Elgin a few months ago doing some sort of a 5K. And I walked down Main Street there in Elgin and I saw a shop and it had a gigantic sign, "We proudly support President Bush and our troops." And by that was this: "If you can read this, thank a teacher. Because it's in English, thank a soldier." Now, my history may be fuzzy, but had we lost the Revolutionary War, I think the British still spoke English, didn't they? I don't know of any other wars that have threatened our language, but so what about the morals of Jesus? Now, the Universalists talk about the religion of Jesus rather than the religion about Jesus. Okay? But one of the things I'm trying to illustrate today is, in all deference to Dr. Lohr, we don't even need the Jesus seminar to show the inhumanity of the teachings of these people who are calling themselves Christians. It's good work, but we don't even need it. We don't even need biblical critique. We can take the passages that are right there in the New Testament and show the inhumanity and the non-Jesusness of what is happening. I want to cite two things. And when you're looking at Scripture from this perspective, I'm going to look at this from an evangelical perspective. That's what I grew up. I can do it. I know how to do it. And when you look at Scripture, you look at what are the primary foundational passages, okay? If this is about Jesus, then there are two passages I want to talk about. Number one is John the Baptist. He was in jail, and he'd been hearing about this Jesus guy doing all this stuff around. And they'd been, of course, they knew about the Messiah. That whole teaching of the Messiah coming. And John sent his disciples out on a little mission. And he said, I want you to ask this Jesus guy, are you the Messiah, or should we wait for someone else? And you know what he told them? Jesus said, go back and tell John, the blind are receiving their sight, the lame are walking, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor are having the good news preached to them, and blessed are those who take no offense at me. When asked what it means to be the Messiah, listen to the answer. I heard nothing about abortion or gay marriage in that statement. Not trying to say those are not valid moral questions, but what is the centerpiece of Messiahhood? You go to Matthew, the 25th chapter, which is a whole chapter about the last judgment day. Jesus tells this parable about the judgment. You probably have heard of it, the sheep and the goats, right? And once again, Jesus said, these people are going to be the sheep. He paints this whole picture of a judgment day. And guess what? Here's what the sheep do. I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was in sick and in prison and you came to see me. And they go, wait a minute, when did that happen? We don't even know you. We never met you. He said what? When you do it to the least of these, my brothers and my sisters, you have done it unto me. And then he turns to the goats and he says, you didn't do this stuff. I don't know you. You will now be thrown into the lake of fire, prepared for you from the beginning and the foundations of the world. So, let's talk about Jesus' moral values. What do you think Jesus thinks about preemptive wars? What does he think about patriot acts, which are really about patriot actors? What does he think about Guantanamo Bay? What does he think about prisoner abuse? What does he think about ghost detainees? Just this week we got some more revelations about mock executions being done in your name and in my name. In the name of Jesus, actually. What does he think about the rich being favored and the poor manipulated or criminalized? What does he think about deception, everywhere from weapons of mass destruction to so-called liberation to so-called democracy? What does he think about paying off media pundits to put forth your policies? What does he think about this fake reporter? Did you hear about this one? Yeah, they caught this guy who's a fake reporter. All he was a lackey for the Republican Party. What would he think about health care for all? Now, everything he said in these passages were about health care. I'm going to tell you, Jesus has a special place for the HMOs. Now, we look at the heartland of America and it's solid red. And where is liberal religion? A minister friend of mine from Tahlequah, Oklahoma, went to Muskogee, Oklahoma. There were some people meeting there who wanted a liberal minister. And at the end of that session, a woman came to her in despair and said, "Where are the liberals? Where have you been? Where are you now? I want the kind of religion you're talking about, but the only religion in my town is this Church of Paul religion." That's my interpretation. "I cannot get the kind of religion that frees me, that you are giving. That's what I want. Where are the liberals in the heartland?" With dismay, I tell you this morning that our UUA is now in love with the mega church movement. And you know what? My friend from Tahlequah went to General Assembly and said, "Where can I get help for my church in Tahlequah?" They said, "We have no money for you, but we have some great things on the website." Millions of dollars are being put into building a mega church in the Dallas area. Currently now, the Uncommon Denomination campaign is in Houston. I'm not saying it's an either or, but we wonder with these kind of decisions why they call us the liberal elite. Is it a mystery? Richard Viguerie has written a book called America's Right Turn: How Conservatives Use New and Alternative Media to Take Power. Viguerie was one of the guys who, after the Goldwater election, began to strategize, put in place a 30 to 40 year plan. The strategy, since Goldwater got trounced, was to use direct mail, radio, cable TV, and the internet to change the heartland of America. You know, there are 1,600 Christian evangelical radio stations and 250 Christian evangelical TV stations. And you can all name some names like Falwell and Robertson and Dobson and Charles Stanley and people of this stripe. And can you name one single liberal minister who even has one radio or TV show on the national scene? You know why? As Lou Reed said, you can't find them because they're not there. When Air America came on the air, do you know what that is? That's the liberal. I called the UUA. I called the public witness office of the UUA, and I said, "I've been doing a radio show in Austin for 9 years. Wouldn't it be great if we could get a Unitarian Universalist on this new liberal station? Could you refer me to some people who might be interested in this? And maybe there's some people in our association or our sphere of influence who are interested in this kind of thing." No, there were. No. I can't think of anybody I was told. I said, "You mean to tell me, in our sphere of influence, there is not a single person that you know of who would have any interest in promoting liberal religion on this new liberal radio station in any way, shape, or form?" "I'm sorry, I don't know anybody." I called again after the election with another green. I got the same answer. "I don't understand it." Have any of you read Jim Wallace's book? Jim Wallace is the evangelical progressive. I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but it's not, because he's read the same passages I was saying today. He's got a book right now called God's Politics: Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. That second part's us. He made 50 predictions for the new millennium. I'm going to tell you three of them. This is very interesting. Number one: faith will be defined by action more than by doctrine. Like he's read, some of our material. Faith will be defined by action more than by doctrine. Number two: the secular left will give up its hostility to religion and spirituality, or it will die. That's us. The need for prophetic religion will grow. Well, yes, obviously. And radio will become more and more important as an alternative media. I don't believe we're using the tools that are available to us to promote our life-giving, liberating gospel. There's not a single minister, not a single liberal minister out there speaking up for the true religion of Jesus. We've got an evangelical guy doing it now. Thank goodness. It's time for us to step up. Because if we don't, we're going to wake up, as we are waking up now, and find that our liberties, that our rights, that our dignity are being given away by an administration who were voted into office as faithful followers of Jesus, when in fact, they are nothing but. Hear this simple and powerful exhortation from Jesus. You are the light of the world. People do not light a lamp and put it under a bushel. But they put it on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. After his 40-day wilderness, straight and narrow testing, Jesus came and he said, I want to speak in church. Now you and I can offer what he had to say. It's a liberating fresh air to our homeland, to our country. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. I'm anointed to preach good news to the poor, proclaim release of the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, and to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Amen.